This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Okay, I want to say thank you very much to our news teams. Thanks for the update, Kanye. Thank you very much for the news update to Nosipho. It's 9 minutes past the hour of 10 o'clock. And let's talk about looking after our children. I think I once heard, I didn't read it, but I once heard somewhere, you can really measure the values in a country simply by judging the way it treats its children, its women. And you won't believe it. It's prisoners, they say. I guess it's about how we define vulnerability, fragility, inequality. And even people who, because of years of entrenched patriarchy, how we define valuable citizens in a country. And I guess that's why there's that saying, you can judge the merit and the mettle of a nation by how it treats this category of people. And now, in Africa, we're told it takes a village to raise a child. And I think there's a lot of credence to that. Grandmothers become nannies. Neighbors become babysitters. Teachers become psychologists. Co-workers can also take on the role of au pair if a mother's an executive, has to fetch a child at school and bring the child to work. It does take that village. But why is it that with all the entrenched norms around love, around protecting our children, around nurturing our children, why is it that South Africa's children remain very, very vulnerable and susceptible to abuse? Especially in environments where there's substance abuse, there's crime, there's conflict. Why do the children become the recipients of the worst kind of social neglect? To that end, there are laws like the Children's Act to protect children. There's a lot of work done to create safe spaces by the Department of Social Development. We've spoken about it at length. But it doesn't stop children being on the receiving end of horrible, horrible treatment. Just let's think about the case of this young girl in Saldanha Bay whose whereabouts are still not known, little Jocelyn Smith. And whatever the outcome, ultimately, and we hope we get the outcome soon, we already know the environment in which she was being raised. A drug-addicted mother on tick, self-confessed, with a boyfriend, selling children to go and buy parcels of tick. What is happening in this country? And how would Nelson Mandela, the first democratically elected president of this nation, what would he say about the really terrible experiences that children go through? A man who so loved children and was asked, what is the thing you missed most in your 27 years incarceration? And he said it was the voice and sound of children's laughter, because in all those years in prison, I never heard the voice of a child. And it is for that reason that Nelson Mandela spent so much time advocating for children and wanting to spend time with children, because he knows what it feels like to live almost 30 years without hearing the voice of a child's laughter. And that's very much the heart of how the Nelson Mandela Children's Fund was born. Because of a grown-up who says, I cannot be whole without the presence of children around me. And so let us use this leadership dialogue to reflect on our norms and our values around how we treat the most vulnerable amongst us. The children we love, and the children we say we love. Because we are here in the southernmost part of Africa. We are still Africans, and it takes a village to raise these children. Dr. Linda Ngubengomo is the CEO of the Nelson Mandela Children's Fund. As I said, she's a chartered accountant by profession, but she's worked with various NGOs. She is the former CEO of Love Life. And when she joined us once upon a time to talk about the work she was doing at Love Life, you could see that for her, it is a kind of advocacy to really speak for children who often don't have a voice to speak for themselves, to put children front and center of our policy discussions and discourse around development, not just issues of job opportunities for the youth, but really seeing the youth as an important constituency in the building of a democracy and the development of a future nation. That without the buy-in of children, without camaraderie amongst children, without consideration for the voice of young people, there's no future nation that's being built. You join us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Lerato. It's such a pleasure to join you and your listeners this morning.
It is a pleasure to have you. So congratulations. We love you in the role of the Nelson Mandela Children's Fund CEO. But what does that role entail? And certainly in the moment in which we find ourselves today in 2024.
Wow. That role entails trying to get us back to where we should be, where children are concerned. So your opening quote that you were talking about is actually President Mandela. And he was saying there can be no keener revelation of a society's soul than in the way in which it treats its children and youth. And if you look at where we are right now as South Africa, we are a soulless society. Mm. And so when he started the Children's Fund, his big, hairy, audacious goal was to change the way society treats its children and youth. And so my role, my job right now, interestingly, I was having a conversation a couple of days ago with one of my colleagues and saying, for me, our job will have been done when I can go back to the board and said we no longer need a Nelson Mandela Children's Fund. Because it will mean we've been able to change the way society treats its children and its youth. Mm. So it is a role that's really trying to inculcate a different value system into society. One that says and recognizes a child today is an adult tomorrow. Mm. So the seed of a child, what am I planting into it? Mm. What are the values I'm planting into the seed? What are the behaviors I'm planting into the seed? Because what the child will experience in the nurturing process will ultimately start to reflect when they're in a position of power and of control.
So we're often told that children are a reflection of the society in which they're raised, but more fundamentally, the home in which they were born. And you can't separate those two. So a child who's born into a situation of poverty and despair, their quality of life is going to reflect that. Mm-hmm. They can't be separated from the reality of what their parents are going through. Similarly, a child born into wealth, their opportunities will reflect that because you can't separate them from that reality. So there is a very strong link, I guess, and it's not, you know, not, it's very apparent between where a child is raised, born, and what happens in the formative years. So what are you seeing in a country that has serious and grave inequalities? What are you seeing replicated in the experience of South African children across these lines of disparity?
So what we're seeing is that a child who, at the time the mother is pregnant, there's inadequate nutrition, is likely to be a child that's on the back foot for the rest of their lives. It almost defines the trajectory.
Explain why that is. They do say that nutrition goes hand in hand with stunting and brain formation.
Absolutely. So that's exactly why it is. So the child doesn't reach the developmental goals that it should be getting to in utero. So when the child is birthed, they are underweight. And if the mother is not getting adequate nutrition during pregnancy, chances are that during lactation and the early childhood development years, that child is going to struggle. So that's the numbers. Those are the children that drive the under five mortalities that you see. Chances are that the child is malnourished or undernourished. They were likely to waste. They're likely not to be on track with vaccines because for the most time, they live 20 to 30 kilometers from the nearest health center. Yeah. So they can't get the treatment. And so we get this child that's behind in terms of their cognitive and development goals into an ECD center.
Okay. So a simple formula, a mother who can't afford to eat regularly, properly, then can't pass on the nutrition to the baby in formation. That baby is born already underweight and without a fully, properly developed physiology and brain. They're not being breastfed properly because the mother doesn't have sufficient nutrition. And so quite early on, that child's going to have learning difficulties because of one simple thing, not being able to be fed properly.
Food. And then that child must go through the rigors of a schooling system and must pass matric and. So when we're talking about a low matric pass rate, which in reality is, we cannot even compare to global levels, when we're talking about young people that cannot apply their minds to how they can become entrepreneurial, when we're talking about what comes out at the end, we need to go back to the beginning. Where did it all start? Okay. Can a child who gets to class hungry be expected to meet the demands of academic rigor and be able to apply what they're learning?
Okay. You're an accountant, so let me give you a stat. UNICEF, which is the United Nations Children Fund, says more than half, so more than 50% of children in South Africa live below the poverty line. So if that poverty line means, as you said, in utero, whilst the mother's pregnant, can't eat sufficiently for that fetus to grow properly, then can't breastfeed that young baby properly at birth, it's the sentence for life. By matric, that child is likely to have a problem. And if we're saying the statistic is more than half, we're saying more than 50% of learners in South African schools today are going to have learning difficulties.
Absolutely. And so when this 50% gets to a certain age, what does it translate to, Lerato? Mm. It translates to young girls who are driving their HIV stats up because we've not equipped them for anything other than using their bodies to get money and are vulnerable in those situations.
Okay. Let me give you a second stat now that you've raised that, also from UNICEF. And these are just South African statistics. They're not Pan-African stats. One third of girls in South Africa, girl children, will experience some form of violence before the age of 18. So in other words, 30 to 33% of girl children in South Africa before they're 18 years of age would have experienced some form of violence, sexual violence, rape. If not rape, they would have been beaten up by someone. If not that, they would have seen domestic violence in their home. So one third of young girls in South Africa will know the face of trauma before the age of 18.
And when we don't empower them, that 18-year-old becomes the ongoing GBV stats that we need to be dealing with. And again, it goes back to what did we do? Where did we spend the money for this child to be truly given a fighting chance to be an adult that can be like you and me in a position where they can make decisions that are not born out of desperation and economics?
Why particularly the girl child before the age of 18? Why does that stat speak so starkly about the girl child experiencing violence before the age of 18?
It's not just the girl child who experiences violence before the age of 18. If you look at the stats of boys, I think the age group is even younger because they've been raised to use fist to solve problems and so on and so on. So I think the conversation is really about violence against and amongst children.
Okay. So they may have segmented this in gender, but what you're saying is from what you're seeing, the average South African child knows some sort of violence before the age of 18.
Yes. Yes.
Why?
I mean, we did a report last year. I just can't remember whether it's 2 or 3 out of 5 boys that are sexually assaulted under the age of 18 here in the Republic of South Africa. But the reports tend to be more girls get reported because you can get the evidence of sexual abuse of a girl. They get pregnant. You can say 600 gave birth.
Yeah.
Those kind of stats don't seem to be collated as well for boys.
And also there's the issue of the shame, isn't it? Boys don't cry. So why didn't you fight back?
Mm.
Why didn't you fight your abuser type thing?
Yeah.
But what is this a reflection of in South Africa, do you think, Doctor?
It's a reflection of a soulless society. It's a reflection of a society where we've lost our values. I mean, you were talking earlier on, it takes a village to raise a child. We've got to reconfigure the village because now it's a metaphorical village. And it's got to be a village that consists of adults with a value system of empathy, of compassion, of love, of my child is your child is my child. A society where we're not complicit by our silence.
Yeah.
And I think that's where all of us are failing children. It's really in the complicity of silence.
Okay. So that's the issue of security and violence. We've also spoken about nutrition and access to food. Now let's just talk about shelter. Because we're told homelessness is a major problem in South Africa in general. But up to more than 200,000 children on average are deprived of housing. So if the parents can't afford housing, adequate housing, they're with their kids. So those children are without adequate housing at any given point in time. So how else does poverty start to taint the experience of raising a child in South Africa?
Before we go to shelter, can I just finish on the point of the underdevelopment of children? Because we've talked about girls, they end up in gender-based violence, driving up HIV stats. What about the boys? The boys are the ones that end up killing us for a phone because we've not equipped them to be economically empowered. So we must not lose focus on the need to invest more in the early stages of the development of a child and want to just focus on when they're at tertiary. Well, where's the investment to make sure that they've got a fighting chance to get to tertiary, a fighting chance to get into a skills program, a learnership program? That investment needs to happen when they are still in utero.
Okay, so just general security for children. 200,000 people are estimated to be homeless. Those homeless South Africans are mothers or fathers. They're part of an ecosystem. What happens to their children?
Their children end up being children who don't know the normal life of a child. Child who doesn't know how to laugh and to live and to thrive because they're in survival mode all the time. So they always stressed, actually. And I think what we could find if we did the research is that we are likely to find higher levels of mental health issues with those children because homelessness means you're not just worried about shelter. There's likely a food issue to worry about. There's a security issue to worry about, sanitation issues to worry about. The child in South Africa, I think the stats are about 60+% of children face multidimensional poverty. So it's intersecting just from poverty alone. There's a whole layer of
problems.
Deprivations that they face.
Okay, so just poverty alone might mean no home.
Yes.
That then translates into no food.
Mm-hmm.
It might be no transport money to take it to school. Definitely no access to the clinic in case you're sick. If that kind of nutritional problem leads to a kind of a septic terminal illness, a parent will die, and then very soon you've got to raise yourself.
Yeah.
And that's the reality of what it does to a child.
That's the reality of what a lot of children in South Africa are living.
Okay, So let's talk solutions, because you've painted a picture for us. The solution, firstly, then, it seems to me, is tackling poverty. But tackling poverty is an economic issue,
mm-hmm.
a policy issue. The stuff that's happening in Treasury, Department of Trade and Industry, the presidency. What's the plan?
It's also the stuff that's happening in the private sector.
Mm.
You know, for the past probably year and a half, the private sector has, the child sector has been lobbying retailers to take the margin off on some key foods that are protein dense that could make a difference to this nutrition conversation that we're having. And it's affecting profit, so there is resistance to getting to a decision. But it is something that could be done. Whereby a basket of foods is identified, and it's not hectic food. We're talking about amasi, we're talking eggs, fortified maize meal, that if kids are having those meal, that kind of food on a regular basis, it starts to change.
Aren't some of those already zero rated?
They're zero rated, but there's still a profit margin. So it means there's no VAT being applied to them,
mm-hmm.
but the retailer is still taking a profit on them. So the ask is, can we sell them at cost and find a way of segregating who can buy it at cost?
Okay. So
and make your markup on the higher end goods where people will just put it into the trolley and swipe and they don't blink at the cost.
So if it costs you 8 rands to bake a loaf of bread and move it to the retailer, charge 8 rands for bread, not 19 rands for bread. Even if it's zero rated. But that's where the profit comes in.
Yes. Essentially. Those are the conversations that are taking place about what we could do. The other thing, Lerato, is the education.
Mm.
So what you find is that a lot of times food is being bought to meet the hunger and not the nutritional value that's linked to it. And that's where then the education needs to come in, that instead of buying this kind of food that will just be nice, but there's no nutritional value to it, let's have a peanut butter sandwich.
Instead.
Because you'll be able to get more out of it by giving that to your child.
We're in conversation with Dr. Linda Ngube. In fact, Dr. Linda Ngube Nkomo, I keep forgetting to put in the double barrel. She's the CEO of the Nelson Mandela Children's Fund, former CEO of Love Life. She has a PhD in business leadership from UNISA. She sits on a variety of corporate boards and has been the chairperson of the Old Mutual Foundation. So what she brings is, now that we're using that word, intersectionality of what's happening in the CSI space with what's happening in the boardrooms, and where we can take conversations out of issues of profits and into issues of real, meaningful, impactful solutions for a country in development. We continue in a moment.
Power Talk, the leadership dialogue.
All right, so the time has gone 10:38. We thank very much the news teams for keeping us up to date with what's happening all around us. We're in a leadership dialogue, and it's really a conversation that is sensitive and touching. We're with the CEO of the Nelson Mandela's Children Fund, Dr. Linda Ngube Nkomo. Could you pick a name?
Linda's fine. Linda, I'm happy with Linda Ngube.
Because then it's Ngube Nkomo, it's Dr. Nkomo. We do love it, because you must affirm. You know, in Zulu, you never lose your paternal name.
Yes.
You are always the daughter of your mother and your father.
Yes.
You know, it's a very important thing. I recognize that. But anyway, we're with Dr. Linda Ngube Nkomo. She's the CEO of the Nelson Mandela Children's Fund, a luminary in our boardrooms. And she's a PhD doctor with a specialization in business leadership. And she's talking to us about things she's observed about the evolution of values in South Africa, how we weave a tapestry of values, of ethics, of norms, particularly around protecting the most vulnerable among us. And from her vantage point, they are children. And she doesn't even segregate children by boy or by girl. She says all children need nurturing, love, provision and protection. And the failure of a society to do that adequately, she said, makes a soul soulless society. She's repeated that term quite a few times. A soulless society, a country that is starting to really lose touch with empathy, sensitivity, and kindness. And we're in a leadership dialogue today to really explore why the United Nations says 4.8 million children in South Africa alone have been impacted by poverty, and drawing the connection between poverty, early childhood development, the physiological cognitive development of a child's brain, that child then being able to make it through the schooling system, and then if not, the poverty that ultimately becomes their reality in adulthood, and the vicious cycle that is woven by a simple issue: not being able to get enough food, not being able to have adequate shelter, not feeling the protection of a community and a state. And just before the news, she was commenting about the fact that we can blame the government for everything, but we must not. We must not lose sight of the responsibility of corporate South Africa, because by making food, especially basic staples, unaffordable, makes them complicit to the problem as well. Luvo is listening to the conversation and says, Lerato, what really hurts me more is when I pass by the robots, a South African term, the traffic lights, those mothers with their little babies, toddlers, who are supposed to be playing with others, but are now witnessing their parents beg and ultimately are then turned into beggars themselves. It's painful to see what children go through. And yet, here's the catch-22, Dr. Ncubengomo, is that children must be with their parents. We say that. So if the mother's not home and can only eke out a living by begging at the traffic lights, where was she supposed to have put the child in the first place?
I don't even have the answer for that, quite honestly, because the reality is that for most of the mothers who are out begging, they've tried to get some form of dignified employment without success. There is a small group that's hiring those children, by the way, but that's not the group we're talking about. Right. We're talking about the mother who has got that maternal drive to provide for her child. And again, it goes back to our failure to provide for our society. You know, talking with funding agencies, one thing I'll tell you is consistent with them when we're talking about issues of children and poverty and everything else, is that South Africa has got enough resources to sort it out. They're just not being utilized. So I've got agencies that will say, I'll give you funding to do work outside of South Africa, because South Africa is not a poor country.
Yeah.
And so it goes back to now the political policy-making leadership. Yeah. What are we prioritizing?
Manage. There? So I think it was somebody who said South Africa does not have a money problem. South Africa has a money management problem.
It's a leadership problem. It's a leadership problem, a leadership that's not compassionate. I think there's a loss of values, because remember, if in leadership studies, we always taught that the leader sets the tone.
Yeah.
The fish will rot from the head.
Absolutely.
So if the value system is lost at leadership level, whether we're talking political, organizational, family, wherever there is leadership, if there's a collapse of values, we're going to see it flow throughout the system.
Yeah. I'm looking at a quote here, John F. Kennedy, former U.S. president as well, Jackie Kennedy's husband. Children are the world's most valuable resource and its best hope for the future. And so countries that really espouse that value system, Dr. Ncubengomo, will invest heavily in education. And then you see the outcomes. So I'm often fascinated by stories of how countries transform from least developed to mid-range income level, or from middle-income economy to fast-growing economy. South Korea always stands out. Mm-hmm. And the story of South Korea is one thing: education. Like, blast the funding for education across the tiers, primary, middle, and higher education. and then see the outcomes. Mm-hmm. And so what we're told is there's a direct correlation. Singapore, the same. Once you invest in a generation through schooling, that generation innovates. And then you build the Samsungs, the Kias, you know, the big new corporates of the future. But you start just at school and you subsidize that education. Mm. It's a very simple formula. It's worked.
And I think that's where the leadership makes the difference, because that's where that kind of decision would be made. It's the treasury allocations of funding that will define how much goes into each one of the different areas that need to be funded. So imagine in a situation whereby a child is going into ECD for the first time, and we have invested in the nutritional for them to get to ECD. And first thing that happens across is there is a meal. Then there is learning and playing. And then there is a meal. Then there is rest. Then there is a snack. We give that child a much better chance than a situation whereby it's, here's the structure. We've put the ECD center for you. The practitioners have been trained. Now go learn.
So this deregulation also can be a disadvantage. Some things just need a heavy hand.
Some things just need a heavy hand and the resources to support holistically what needs to be happening within that space.
All right. I love another quote that says, keep your children wild. Don't make them grow up too fast. And I think this is what the listener is referring to, is that in South Africa, when children are bogged down with the problems that adults are facing, witnessing them and then having to be part of the solution, they lose their innocence. And to lose your innocence is to lose your creativity.
We need to really create a safe South Africa where children don't just live and survive, but they thrive. And I think a lot of children right now, they're in survival mode. And the question that all of us need to be looking for the answer to is, within my sphere of influence, how do I make sure that the environment is conducive for children to thrive?
Something that's always intrigued me, and maybe you can help me today, is that South Africa has, as part of its social welfare package, we've got SASSA, which is a pensioner, state pension subsidized, and we've got a child grant, right? And a child grant is largely for child-headed households or children who have to fend for themselves. I've often wondered, so once you've disbursed the money, are these children principally their own caregivers? Is that the society we're in?
Well, some of those grants go to children who are also in households where there is no source of income. And so what you find is that child grant feeds everybody. And I mean, that thing is less than 600 rand. So that's where then the nutritional value of what the child eats gets highly compromised, because we're just going to focus on what can everybody in this household eat, as opposed to what are the child nutritional friendly foods that we should be bringing into the home.
You mentioned mental health, and I think this is very much a theme of this era. Mental health in the workplace, mental health in schools, mental health the children. And what we're seeing at school level, and you've seen it, children lashing out. So bullying has gone up. Disrespect of teachers gone up. Even violence at school, where children are then beating up the adults in the room. There's a disconnect here. There's a dissonance here. What do you attribute it to?
I think it's a reflection of what children are seeing in the homes. What are they seeing in the communities? What are they seeing on TV? And it's just playing out. There's also a lot of children that are carrying a lot inside. Children who are being abused and lash out as a cry for help rather than just wanting to be aggressive. So there's a lot of intersecting things that come to play to build up that anger and that volcano-like behavior that we see in children.
So let's talk about the ecosystem of solutions. You alluded to it at the beginning, and you said on the food nutrition side, it's not even how much money is going to the households, it's what the retailers do. And it's got to be more than just zero rated VAT. It's got to be staples that are not part of the profit equation. What else? When it comes to funding programs, you've just alluded to the fact that donors say, we can fund you, but from what we can see, there's lots of money in South Africa. It just doesn't go to children or to causes for children. So how do we solve here?
Well, I mean, the money that is there within the development sector, there's a lot of competition for it. So there's climate change that needs money. There is gender-based violence that doesn't focus on violence against children that needs money. There, you know, there's wars right now in the world that need money. I think what we need to be looking at is the money that we do have in South Africa. And I'm now going to private sector money because there's a lot of money there. But what we find is that there's very little
appetite
to fund the things that really need the funding. So, for example, if I am a medical company, I want my CSI to focus on something that's aligned to my business. If I'm a tech company, I want something that's aligned to my business. There is very little investment in saying, what are the real issues that need to be funded? And let's take our SED money, let's take our CSI money, and let's put it in the real issues that need to be funded, as opposed to the bare minimum that we need to do to tick the box.
Okay, so if I push back, I'd say, but companies aren't just built by magic. Shareholders pump money into that company. Companies often have to go and raise debt to expand their companies. They could go to the capital markets. So there's no such thing as free money. So to be asking a business that must generate a profit and then add value and a return on investment to just give away money without the end game being understood, it's a hard sell.
Well, companies have got SED responsibilities and CSI responsibilities. Mm-hmm. And that's the money that I'm talking to. So I'm not even talking to find extra money. I'm talking about the 5% net profit after tax that you need to spend. Where are you spending it? And so what we see is that it gets spent back into something that's very closely aligned to the core business, as opposed to saying, actually, what are the issues that could change the lever of poverty in society if we invested in those, even though they may not necessarily be aligned?
So maybe it's clarity that I'm looking for here, because some people say there's sense in that. If I am an insurance firm and I'm using my CSI money to fund a startup in fintech, that business one day becomes a subsidiary of our business. So what we are doing is we are being part of a solution, but we are also creating an environment where we can grow our portfolio going forward. Funding a crash is not going to do that for us.
In the now, it won't. But that crash is the future policy holder that is going through that crash. It's your future entrepreneur, your future employee that you're investing in. So do you want to reap a dividend and go in for the long term? Or are we looking at what's the short-term returns and somebody else will deal with what's going to be existing 10 years from now?
You've alluded to the fact that one of the issues we're plagued with in South Africa is a leadership dilemma. And from what I heard you say, the inference is, yes, there are leaders, there are men and women in suits calling the shots, but they don't have the sensitivity, the care, the sincerity, if I understood you correctly.
So it almost feels like people are holding leadership positions without a North Star. And the North Star should be what is best for South Africa, as opposed to what is best for me in this position that I'm currently holding.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times that North Star has been lost. In fact, I would be bold to say we've lost that North Star over a couple of decades almost now. And we need to redefine that North Star that says, who is the leader whose interests are the best for South Africa Incorporated, as opposed to the leader whose interests are the best for my affiliation.
And so for people who say, I long forgot about my North Star, that young man or woman has disappeared. I remember wanting to be part of something great, but I don't know how to tap into that. If you had to help them find it, what would you say? What are you looking for if you're looking for that purpose as a leader?
I'm looking for values. I'm looking for that value that when you have to make a difficult decision is going to be the guiding principle. That value that you lean into so that even if you wake up in the middle of the night and you are having a dream where you need to make a decision, you know without doubt that the integrity of the decision cannot be questioned.
So a country like South Africa would need what values? I'd like you to spell them out for us. Given the, you know, the expanse of problems, plethora, I think is the word, what would a good grouping of leaders need to be addressing as part of their fundamental value system?
We talk a lot about Ubuntu. It's leaders who will live out that value. I am only because you are.
Yeah.
You know, Lerato, in the Shona language, the spoken in Zimbabwe, the basic greeting when somebody says, how are you? The answer literally translates to, I am well only if you are well. Literal translation. And that's the kind of leadership that we need that says, if you're not well, how can I be well? Our wellness is interconnected.
And yet somebody would say, interesting that that's the greeting in Zimbabwe. Look at the state of the country.
It's the value loss. It's going back to the leadership that's lost a value. So it's no longer about I am well only if you are well.
Yeah.
I'm well if I've got the best and the master.
Do you think it's an African problem?
I think it's an African problem. I think we, because Ubuntu, I mean, is derived from Ntu, which is like the whole of Southern Africa. But when you look across, you can see that it's no longer about your well-being. It's about if I'm fine,
that's all
take
that matters.
Care of yourself.
And in some countries, it's been entrenched and normalized.
Yes.
If I'm thinking of West Africa in particular, which is why there are so many coups, because the leaders long time ago abandoned the general public.
Yeah, and it's going to take generations. And the generations that are trying to build it, unfortunately, it's going to be a lot of trial and error because they've not seen what normalcy and Ubuntu and leadership with values looks like. So they're going to be trying to figure it out as they go.
Okay, I'm going to ask you to put on those earphones next to you. And Tebogo in Hartbeespoort, you'd like to say something?
Good morning. Yeah, first, our problem is leadership, yes. People are in position of power, but they're not in position of leadership. So that's the first thing. So my issue is that we all know that you've got money in South Africa and then money has been jailed through corruption. So the solution is universal income grant. Give people money, give people the 3.5, each and every person must get 3.5 so that you can deal with the issue of poverty. Because when money is in the hands of the people, it means the money is going to circulate. It's going back to the economy. So that is the an easiest way to deal with the issue of economy, including the issues of poverty. Thank you.
Thanks, Tebogo. We know that the Minister of Finance has already said they are looking at the various models around how to introduce a basic income grant. We're not there yet, but it's definitely one of the top priorities of the state to find the right model, the right quantum, etc. But he said an interesting thing: power versus authority, or power versus leadership. Many people have power, but do they really have leadership skills? Is what he's saying.
I agree that there's a lot of power flying around, but very, very little leadership. There's a lot of positional power, but very little that is about. Remember, leadership is about how do you get people to become a better version of themselves under your guidance, under your whatever the word would be.
Stewardship.
And I think we have lost that for quite a while.
Yeah. So let me ask you this as we wind down our conversation. I mean, you actually have a doctorate in business leadership. So these are things you've grappled with a lot in your various roles in the corporate sector. But you've worked in the NPO sector, shall we call it that, Love Life. So your observations of the world, how you lead, and ultimately your North Star. What is it for you as Dr. Nubengom?
My North Star is always integrity. Have I done the right thing? That if I was to stand before God and he asked me about a situation, would I be able to say with all the information, with all the knowledge, with all the facts, the decision that I made was coming from a space of integrity? That's the value that I want to live, sleep and die by, integrity.
And what you've said, with all the information, with all that I knew. So in other words, the scientific, methodical manner of leading, I will deploy it. But I'm going to deploy it for what I believe is the right, just outcome.
Yeah. Yeah, the right, just outcome. And if later on it was not the right one, make amends for it. Own up to it. Take responsibility for having made that decision.
And so when we began this conversation, we quoted the founder, proprietor of the Nelson Mandela Children's Fund, the late President Nelson Mandela himself. And you said, I will know that we have been successful if there isn't another child sleeping hungry, not in school, stunted and poor. If we can address that, there'll be no need for a Nelson Mandela Children's Fund.
Oh, there's one more. There's no child who's being violated in any way, because that's not a poverty issue. That's a behavioral issue. Children just disappearing, being abused, whether it's physical, mental, emotional. When we have created South Africa that's safe for children to not just survive and live, but to thrive and to laugh and to be safe in the places where they live, work and play, then we can close shop.
And you will consider your work done?
I'll consider my work done, and I'll say to my board, we've done a good job. And President Mandela smiling at the state of children in South Africa.
So echoing those sentiments of Dr. Linda Ncube Nkomo, the CEO of the Nelson Mandela's Children Fund, let me close off this leadership conversation by quoting Oscar Wilde, who says the best way to make children good people is to make them happy. And that's what Dr. Linda is saying. Happy children make good, productive citizens in future. We wish you well in your work at the Nelson Mandela Children's Fund.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your support. And I'm looking for the support of also your listeners. 67 Rand on our website can go a long way to making a difference in the lives of children.
Doing it now. News time.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.